Hello, I'm Leighton Clark. This is number 0303, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0303. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Robert Crane, author of Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder. What made him write this book after all these years?
Well, I'm finally ready to deal with the fallout from my dad's unsolved murder, my family being in a survival mode for all these years, getting through rumors and innuendos and all the post-murder stuff, the investigation that took 16 years and a trial for the main suspect, and he was acquitted. And I've also been writing my whole life too, so every book that I worked on, I felt like I got better at mining information.
Famed fashion entrepreneur George Zimmer and his new business, Z Tailors. How does it work?
It's very simple. If you buy a suit, we have B2B partners now like Macy's or Bloomingdale's. So if you buy a suit from them on their website, it'll ask you if you would like a Z tailor to come out to your home or office when the garment arrives to provide the tailoring. So we're doing this both as a business-to-business and as a direct business-to-consumer, where you may schedule on our website the tailor visit.
Personality expert Carrie Hopkins on the personality behind names.
People think, I got to tell you the truth. Me, personally, I thought when I was growing up, you know, I met a kid and their name was Richard. So I figured, oh, the parents are conservative. Or I met a kid with an unusual name and I thought, oh, the parents must be, you know, unique. And so they're raising the kids differently. But that's not how it is at all. Oh, my goodness. If you change your name, you change how people perceive you and you change how you perceive yourself.
And, of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0303, was Leighton Clark, who is a director at Global Edmonton. I deal with him on a weekly basis. Yes, I do. Thank you very much, Leighton, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, there was a deadly earthquake at Mount Kinabalu in Malaysia. And while it's tragic news and at press time, 16 people have been killed, the folks that are being blamed for the earthquake, yes, you heard me right, blamed for the earthquake, include Canadians. And that's what makes this story stuff file worthy. Five tourists who stripped naked on the sacred Malaysian mountain apparently caused the 6.0 magnitude earthquake. That's what officials in Malaysia are saying. Two Canadians are among the group that went nude on Mount Kinabalu. The country's deputy chief minister said, "Whether other people believe this or not, it's what we Sabahans believe. When an earthquake happened, it's like a confirmation of our beliefs. It is a sacred mountain and you cannot take it lightly." Sabah, which is known for its incredible beauty, is a state of Borneo Island. The country's tourism, culture, and environment minister says the five will not be allowed to leave the country until they face action. Only after will we kick them out and ban them from entering Sabah again, he said. The five, including Canadian siblings Lindsay and Danielle Peterson from Saskatchewan, are facing charges of gross indecency. Okay, I'm not about to knock somebody's religious beliefs, but this is like something right out of a 1930s RKO movie. Yee. And a woman was charged with driving under the influence after consuming whipped cream. Police said the 28-year-old Anna Thomas of Franklin, Tennessee, used cans of aerosol whipped cream to get high. She was charged with driving under the influence after crashing her car. When police arrived, Thomas was disoriented. Officers found 13 cans of whipped cream scattered inside the vehicle. Almost all the bottles were empty. No pie was discovered, by the way. You know, 13 cans of whipped cream leads me to believe that there are just some people in life, no matter what you do, who are going to get high. I mean, this takes a heck of a lot of work, don't you think? Okay, a waitress at a Waffle House in Macon, Georgia, called police to report that another employee, a man, had told her that he was going to pleasure himself. That's what the local television station used for the euphemism that I think you all know what that is, right? Yes. And he did actually enjoy the pleasure of his own company. She had just finished with a phone call, so she used her phone to take video of the act as the man sat at a table in his company uniform. According to the resulting report from the Bibb County Sheriff's Office, she stated that as she was recording him, she was telling him the whole time that she was recording him and that he was a pervert. She stated that he responded by saying he wasn't a pervert, he was just a freak. That's a subtle distinction there, but anyway, that's what he wants to go by. The video was somehow posted to social media, the waitress said, and it went viral. When Waffle House corporate offices saw it, the male employee was fired. When he learned a warrant was issued for his arrest, 36-year-old Emmanuel Williams, already a registered sex offender, turned himself in. Meanwhile, the Macon Bibb County Health Department wasn't terribly concerned. This is a quote here that has me a bit concerned. Food safety in a restaurant is the same principles of food safety that you should practice when you're handling food or cleaning services in your home, a spokeswoman said. Okay. Here's where all the double entendres come in. The spokeswoman went on to say, you should learn how to properly wash, rinse, and sanitize your equipment, your utensils, and how to hold things at a proper temperature. Yeah, sounds like the guy who was enjoying himself liked his equipment, and already it was being held at a too hot setting, if you know what I mean. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, while executing a search warrant looking for a drug operation in Jimmy Mook James's apartment, police in Springfield, Massachusetts say they found cocaine, money, scales, and drug paraphernalia. They also noticed something else, a Bible on James's nightstand. A detective, thinking that James did not seem like an overly religious person, opened the book and found that it was hollowed out so that it could conceal a loaded pistol. James, who is 32, returned to his apartment during the raid and was arrested. He is charged with resisting arrest, refusing to submit to fingerprinting, possession of cocaine with intent to distribute, possession of a firearm while committing a felony, and possession of ammunition, and also improper storage of a firearm in a Bible. That's an actual, apparently, charge. Possession, improper storage of a firearm in a Bible. Okay, so then what I'd like to know is, what's the proper way to store a firearm in a Bible? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? For those of us who grew up in the 1960s, Bob Crane was well known for his lead role in the hit CBS sitcom Hogan's Heroes. But his personal life was not necessarily one filled with laughter. He was ultimately murdered in 1978 in a crime that has still gone unsolved. His son Robert is the co-author of a new book called Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder. He joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So it's almost 30 years since your father was murdered. Why have you decided to write this book now?
Well, I'm finally ready to deal with the fallout from my dad's unsolved murder, my family being, you know, in a survival mode for all these years, getting through, you know, rumors and innuendos and all the post-murder stuff, the investigation that took 16 years and a trial for the main suspect, and he was acquitted. And I've also been writing my whole life too. So every book that I worked on, I felt like I got better at mining information. And I used to write for Playboy. I did 20 years with them and interviewing people. And each piece got better. I think I got better at it. And I'm just to the point in my life now where, you know, they say write about what you know. And I was ready. I mean, this is it.
All these years later, was this a cathartic experience for you to write this and to delve back in the story?
It was in a number of ways, not only dealing with the it's really a blend of true crime biography and autobiography. So it's not only dealing with the background on this unsolved crime, but it's dealing with my family and my, you know, I got a wonderful stepdad out of this whole thing, and he's our Buddha, he's our wise man. And then the autobiography part of it is, of course, me just being I was 5 years old when we came to Los Angeles because my dad got a job on the radio, and he wanted to be an actor, and he kept developing that until he got his big break on Hogan's. And, you know, all of a sudden, this small-town Connecticut family had a world-famous guy in their midst, and it was dealing with that. And that's part of the autobiography part of it.
Mm. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, there was a lot in the personal life of your dad that's certainly not the most PG of situations. I mean, he had a not-so-secret double life as a sex addict, and he was a homemade pornographer, and some people suspect that that has something to do with his untimely death as well. What was that like for you dealing with that situation when the news came out? People are talking about it, there's speculation about it, there are tabloid stories about it, but this man was your dad.
Yeah, it's the old thing, you know, you're always watching the news and it's somebody else, you know, and you go, ah, poor them. But this time it was our family. It was really a hobby of his. He loved cameras and videotape and all that kind of stuff, and he loved women. He probably should not have been married, even though he was a fun-loving dad to his kids. And it really came, this whole thing came out after he died, perpetrated by his widow, Patty, who he was going through a pretty bad divorce at the time of his death. She unloaded all of the private tapes. Otherwise, nobody would know about this.
And we should clarify for those who don't know, Patty was his second wife. That's not your mom you're referring to, right?
Correct. Yeah, my mom is Ann. We're part of the first family. And Patty was the second family, and she was also Hilda on Hogan's Heroes, Clink's secretary.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you've already touched on the fact that you were a writer. You worked writing for Playboy. You also worked as a publicist, correct?
Yes, for someone that Canada knows and loves, John Candy.
And the reason why I bring that up is when you read through the story of your dad's life and you hear what took place, and of course, stories have been told, movies have been done, now your book is out. It seems like one of the things your dad could have really used is a PR person, because PR people do the best in putting out somebody's story, but also they work as gatekeepers. Is it kind of ironic that this is something you ended up doing?
Yes. This is a great point, Peter. He absolutely needed a PR guy. And he had no one at the gate, and because he didn't trust anybody, he always did everything on his own. He didn't have assistants, he didn't have, you know, limo drivers, he didn't have a posse, none of this. He did it all by himself, except for Hogan's, when he trusted Edward H. Feldman, who was the producer of the show. That was the only time he ever trusted anybody. So he didn't deal with publicity, good or bad. He just didn't know what to do with it. And you're absolutely correct. He needed guidance in that area.
Do you think your father's murder will ever be solved?
Well, I think the two prime suspects in my mind are both deceased now. The first one is John Henry Carpenter. He's not the film director, but he was a videotape, a video equipment salesperson who my dad met on a set of Hogan's Heroes. He was in Scottsdale, Arizona, when my dad was there doing a play. He would visit my dad in different cities around the states. So he had the means and the opportunity, and they had a big falling out. My dad was tired of what he called kind of hangers-on, and he wanted to make some big changes in his life because he was coming up on 50, 2 weeks shy of it. The second person, and Carpenter did eventually go to trial 16 years after the fact. The prosecution did the best they could, but there just wasn't enough there to put together a good case. It was pre-DNA testing and, you know, Cellmark labs and all that kind of stuff. The second person in my mind, the person who had the motive, was the aforementioned Patty, who was in the middle of a terrible divorce with my dad at the time of his death. Instead of 50-50 settlement in California, she got 100%. Now, it wasn't a vast fortune, but for 1978, it was very comfortable, and she lived off of it for the rest of her life. She's also deceased. So, long story short, I think those are the two prime suspects in my mind. I don't think it was a mob hit or a jealous boyfriend, or it was a crime of passion. He was, my dad was struck in the head twice with what they think was a tripod, which makes sense for both prime suspects in my mind doing it that way. And they're both deceased now. Hmm. So I think it's a cold case.
We have the image of your father from the days he was in Hogan's Heroes and also another show that he did after that, and some of the film work he's done. We have the image, unfortunately, that has been played out in the tabloids. Tell us something about your dad from your perspective that we don't know, that you'd like him to be remembered as.
Just an absolutely fun-loving, fun-seeking person. We had a thing called Fellini Excursions. And as I got older, my dad would be invited to, you know, go to something, and nobody else wanted to go. So he would call me up. You want to go to Las Vegas? Yeah, sure. So one time we go to the celebrity bocce tournament, you know, bocce ball, at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. Now, what are we doing here? We meet Joe DiMaggio, the great Yankee Clipper, you know, who was married to Marilyn Monroe, who's the sourest person. He's trying to figure out what the heck he's doing at this thing. And on and on and on, and it was just so bizarre. My dad and I looked at each other at one point. We said, Fellini Excursion. And this is, you know, Federico Fellini, who made all these great films with bizarre characters in it. He just had a great outlook on certain things. I wish he had written some of these things down. It was all in his brain. When he was on the radio, he never had a script. It was all in his head, went straight out of his mouth, onto the microphone, live, out into the airwaves, but he never wrote anything down. And I wish he would have written more. But to answer your question, just a fun-loving guy, not as grim as some of these tabloids make this all out to be. What he did was his private hobby, if you will. The women involved were all, consenting adults. It was the selfie of the day is what it was. Instead of a little cell phone camera, it was a video camera, and a lot of people enjoyed looking at themselves on the monitor.
Mm. And you mentioned radio. We should also mention your father did a radio show for 9 years before he did Hogan's Heroes, correct?
Yeah, he was on KNX in Los Angeles for 9 years. He was what they called the morning man, and that was interviewing people and, you know, playing music, and he did a lot of comedy off the top of his head and played sound effects, you know, to punctuate some kind of a routine he was doing, again, in his head, never written down. And some of the guests that came in the last hour of the show, like Carl Reiner, the great producer, writer, director, saw this and they said, wow, next week on the Dick Van Dyke Show, this is the early 60s, you know, we have a guest role for a kooky neighbor, you'd be perfect. So that's how my dad started building up acting credits, you know, being on the Van Dyke Show, Alfred Hitchcock, presents and, you know, shows of the day until he got a crack at Hogan's.
People can find out more information by reading your book, and they can also find out more information about your work with John Candy as well. The book is called Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder. It's written by Robert Crane. And Robert, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Robert Crane, author of Crane, Sex, Celebrity, and My Father's Unsolved Murder. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0303, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to George Zimmer about his new company, Z Tailors, and we'll learn about the power behind your name. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And of course, much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Well, pointless arguments that lead to violence kind of brings us to this next story. 31-year-old Holly Solomon pleaded guilty in April to aggravated assault with her Jeep against her then-husband and has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. The crime occurred in a suburb of Phoenix in November in 2012, days after President Obama's re-election, as Solomon ran down her spouse because she was angry that he had neglected to vote for Mitt Romney as expected. However, his no-show did not have any kind of effect whatsoever on the outcome, as Romney easily won that particular state's 11 electoral votes without him. So her attempt to mow her soon-to-be ex-husband down was a pointless one. Wonder who she's going to vote for, when she gets out. Yeah, that's what I like to know. A man identified only as A.S. of Passaic County, New Jersey, was sued by the Passaic County Social Services Board for child support when his romantic partner, identified only as T.M., had twins, and she identified him as the father and applied for public assistance. When TM admitted AS was not the only man she had sex with that week, the agency ordered a DNA test to establish fatherhood. The test came back showing AS was the father of only one of the twins, not both. The judge therefore ruled AS would only have to pay support for one of the twins. So, where's the other guy? That's what I like to know, so that he can get, you know, an identical ruling. And at some point, perhaps when the twins are teenagers, Mom is going to have to explain just how slutty she was. Well, under the headline of People Different From Us, 66-year-old Walter Merrick was charged with aggravated assault in the New Orleans suburb of Harvey, Louisiana, in March, after an altercation with neighbor Clarence Sturtevant, who was also 64, over the comparative merits of Busch and Budweiser beers. Budman Sturtevant fired the only shot, but a sheriff's deputy said Merrick was the aggressor since he had offered Sturtevant only a Busch. Seriously? He's the aggressor? Huh? Well, maybe he didn't have any other kinds of beer in his house. How does that make him the aggressor? Since when is offerings... Anyway, never mind. Meanwhile, back in April, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, police found two blood-spattered men in an apartment parking lot at 1 a.m., the result of a dual stabbing spree with broken beer bottles over whether Android phones are superior to iPhones. Okay, but were the broken beer bottles Busch or Budweiser? You know, there are some people out there who are just looking for a battle anywhere. I'm just waiting for a murder case somewhere that starts because two people can't decide which is the best way to hang toilet paper, over or under. You know, it's just a matter of time before that happens. Anyway, repeated instances of school teachers found drunk in their classrooms is now officially passé, but what we have here takes it to a whole new height. A teacher's aide was found passed out in a girl's restroom at Ford Elementary School in Denver, Colorado. 27-year-old Cassandra Rain was found by first graders who called in adults to aid her. They in turn called police because, according to the police report, Rain had a syringe hanging from out of her arm and a piece of metal foil with an empty clear bag containing a small amount of unknown white powder by her side. In addition, several bottles of various pills and more syringes were found in her purse. When a teacher asked her about the syringe, Rain stated her roommate was diabetic and did not know why it was there. Really? Rain was arrested on drug charges because apparently she's only practiced enough at lying to fool first graders. Well, Chad and Joey Mudd of Largo, Florida, provided incentives for their 13 and 14-year-old daughters to go to school and do their chores until they were arrested for the incentive. If the children were going to school, doing household chores and such, explained the sheriff's office spokeswoman, that was the incentive to smoking marijuana with the mother. According to an affidavit, 34-year-old Joey smoked pot with her daughters 5 times, and 36-year-old Chad snorted cocaine with the girls and one of their boyfriends. Chad was charged with 6 counts of child abuse and 1 count of possession of cocaine, while Joey was charged with 2 counts of child abuse. According to arrest records, Joey works at a pediatrician's office. So obviously she knows what's best for her daughter's well-being. Okay, aren't you kind of curious about how well their chores were done and what their grades are like? Yeah, I just want to know if the incentive worked. Anyway. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, British forensic scientist Dr. Brooke Magnanti has written 2 best-selling books and inspired a TV series based on her life, but she recently filed a lawsuit accusing her ex-boyfriend of libeling her by telling people that she was not, I repeat, not formally a prostitute. A major part of Magnanti's biography is how she paid for university studies through prostitution, which has supposedly enhanced her marketability. Well, I guess in a world where someone like Kim Kardashian can become extremely wealthy and famous from initially releasing a sex tape, well, this makes sense. But seriously, isn't this just one of the first signs of the apocalypse? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program, shall we? George Zimmer is an American entrepreneur who is a pioneer in men's fashion. He's the founder and former CEO and chairman of Men's Warehouse, which here in Canada is known as Moore's Clothing for Men. For years, you've heard him say, "You're going to like the way you look." Well, George is spearheading a new business called Z-Tailors, a website and app that helps connect customers with on-demand tailors who make house calls. George joins us on the line right now. Hi, George.
Good morning.
You have come up with this idea, which is now being called the Uber of tailors. How did this come to be?
Well, I have a long history working with tailors, of course. And tailors are the quintessential underdogs, often immigrants. Many of them don't speak English as fluently as natives. And I just really have always resonated working with the underdog. So when this idea emerged, it seemed like the perfect opportunity for me to decide the terms of my own second act.
So how exactly does it work?
It's very simple. If you buy a suit, we have B2B partners now like Macy's or Bloomingdale's. So if you buy a suit from them, on their website, it'll ask you if you would like a Z tailor to come out to your home or office when the garment arrives to provide the tailoring. So we're doing this both as a business-to-business and as a direct business-to-consumer, where you may schedule on our website the tailor visit.
So you're dealing with established businesses, is what you're saying here. It's not a situation where someone is making the suits from scratch for you, and you're only working online, and there's no brick and mortar, correct?
That's correct. We don't sell any clothing. We only tailor.
Okay. Now, a lot of places already have tailoring services available. So what's the advantage here for the businesses you're dealing with as opposed to the consumer?
Well, you probably have to ask them, but in the short time that we've been doing this, we've had no business absolutely turn us down. Everybody has expressed either some interest or a strong interest. The reason I believe is that most people in the tailored apparel business do not particularly work well with tailors and think of them as loss leaders rather than profit centers. So there's no resistance in getting stores to seek out new sources of tailoring.
It seems to be, both with the previous business you were in and this business, I mean, this is relatively brand new, but when you come up with something, it always appears that, like, someone could have said, gee, why didn't I think of that? You seem to be always ahead of the curve. How does that happen for you?
Well, I think it's connected to the fact that I'm never trying to create something that is strictly in my own self-interest. Of course, I have a vested interest. I'm the largest investor in this business. But I really love the idea that I've become the Pied Piper of tailors and can create an intersection of technology and human touch that will enable tailors to double their income and take control of writing their own schedules.
Now, I understand you have already about 600 tailors signed up. What is the criteria for finding the tailors so that they meet the level of quality that you're looking for?
Well, we want 5 years minimum experience. And then we have 8 regional tailors and 8 regional vice presidents. And between the 16 of them, they interview and test all the tailors that are in the Z-Tailors network.
I mentioned in the introduction that I said here that we're here in Canada. I know this is available in the United States. Are you planning to branch out into Canada and beyond?
Well, we don't have anything specifically on the drawing boards, but I will tell you that just like Uber, we think that this idea is applicable in many of the Western industrial countries. We're even taking a look at Asia, Japan, and China.
Wow. Now, when people think of tailoring, I know it's a kind of a bit of a sexist world. We think of men's suits, but you do women's clothing as well, correct?
Absolutely. And the customer lets us know online whether we're going to be tailoring men's, women's, children, or bridal. And in our next technology release, you'll be able to select the gender of the tailor that you would like. Obviously, there are many women who would only like a woman coming out, and we'll be able to put a picture of the tailor on your electronic confirmation.
How does payment work?
Well, currently we use the Square, and we are, in our next release, going to be converting to a credit card system like Uber, including allowing the consumer to tip the tailor.
And are you paying the tailor, the individual tailor who comes to you, or the retailer from where the clothing originally came from?
We split 65-35 with the tailor, and the retailer doesn't get any money. They just get the enhanced business opportunity from offering the service.
Now, are there any special services involved that one can get? For instance, custom garments or wedding dress alterations, for instance, stuff like that.
Not custom clothing, but absolutely. Weddings is a whole separate category. So if a woman has a wedding gown or a bridesmaid's dress that they need tailored, we have people that specialize in that. And if you need something turned around overnight as opposed to the normal 5 to 7 day return, we'll take care of that for a very nominal upcharge.
Okay. And what about making appointments? How far in advance, how quickly can you get a tailor to come by wherever you are, home or work?
Well, it's our hope that you'll be able to order a tailor for the very next day. But because we've just gone public this week and we've had hundreds of online requests for tailors around the country, you may have to wait a couple of days right now. But the goal is to have thousands of tailors in the network so that you, the consumer, are in complete control.
And for those who might not be aware of it, just what kind of cost frame are we talking about? Some people might not have an idea of what a tailor will cost or how much it costs for alterations.
It's not as expensive as people think. Tailoring used to be the purview of the wealthy. It really is now for everybody. The average suit would run $30 to $40 in tailoring. And the way we intend on making money is in volume, by once we're at somebody's home, suggesting that there probably are other products in their closet that they'd wear more often if they fit better.
It's an interesting concept, the fact that, I mean, you know, I buy a suit because you guys come in as tailors. I buy a suit, I'm very happy with it, and suddenly I'm thinking, wow, there are other things in my closet that might fit better if I had it tailored. So you're driving business that way too.
Absolutely, and right now we're not sure how it's going to evolve because we're really creating the future here. We don't know.
Well, if people want to go on, get on the ground floor of this, it's an app and it's also a website. People can check out ztailors.com, correct?
That is correct. Plural, ztailors.
Mr. Zimmer, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
George Zimmer and his new business, Z-Tailors. You can check out their website at ztailors.com. And of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0303, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Do you know how much money you'll pay this year to your local government because of lawsuits? Most of us have no idea how much extra we pay to cover lawsuits that have been filed against our cities and counties. Usually, these legal costs are paid from the general fund, so the impact on each taxpayer is never known. However, this year, homeowners in a suburb of Detroit will know exactly how much their tax bill is rising because of one recent lawsuit. The city of Inkster is reporting that it's levying a special one-time tax assessment on homeowners to cover a $1.4 million judgment against the city. The money will pay for a lawsuit against the police department. The average homeowner there will have to pay an extra $180 because the city's insurance policy won't cover the cost of the lawsuit. Let's be fair. Cities across the country are reporting record payouts for lawsuits, and experts believe more municipalities will begin levying special lawsuit taxes. If your city has ever made you pay a special lawsuit tax, we'd like to hear from you. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come, we'll learn about the power of your name. Plus, we'll also have an idiot of the day, as usual. But first, we have a few more Stuff File news stories I want to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And we have a couple of stories that deal with some of the youthful weenies in the younger generation. Number one, nursing student Jennifer Burbella filed a lawsuit against Misericordia University near Scranton, Pennsylvania, for not helping her enough to pass a required course that she had already failed twice. The professional caregiver-to-be complained of stress so severe that she needed a distraction-free room and extra time for the exam, but claimed she deserved even more special treatment. Yeah. Do you really want this person as your nurse? And number two, four Columbia University students complained in May that courses in Greek mythology and Roman poetry needed trigger warnings, advance notice to super-sensitive students that history may include narratives of disturbing events that have somehow been studied without such warnings, by the way, for centuries. I'm telling you, these are people who have been coddled all through their young lives. You know, at some point, someone has to push them out of the nest of life and let them plummet to the ground. Yeah. And elsewhere in the Stuff File, suspended Catholic Monsignor 63-year-old Kevin Whalen was sentenced in May to more than 5 years in prison for running a meth distribution ring from Bridgeport, Connecticut, where he also operated a sex shop to launder the drug profits. Though he faced a 10-year sentence, he had a history of charity work and submitted more than 80 letters of support from high-ranking clergy. Wow. Gee. If only there was, you know, somewhere that he could turn for moral guidance, being a Monsignor and all. Imagine the good he might be able to do. Gee, who could he turn to? That's going to stump me for a while. I'll have to get back to that one. In the meantime, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? What's in a name? Just last week, Bruce Jenner was reintroduced to the world as Caitlyn. So what does that name say about her? And for that matter, what does any of our names say about us? Joining us right now is personality profile expert Carrie Hopkins. She is the creator of NameZook. She's also the author of Breaking the Name Code, Define Your Name, Design Your Life. She joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Carrie.
How you doing, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Right now, off the bat, I want to start, before I get to Bruce, I want to get to you, and that is, does it make a difference how one spells a name? Because you spell, for instance, Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-E, and there are many ways to spell Carrie. So what does that mean?
Oh, see how smart you are, Peter. Oh, my goodness. It makes a total difference. I'm a behavioral economist. I've been doing this ever since I was 3 years old in school. I didn't know that there was a skill to it. I thought everyone knew, but Peters are great guys, and you know, everyone has to have a Peter in their life because they're so much nice guys. But I study people and I observe them, and I observe their personality traits and their characteristics that are predictive of their names. And I met this. I had two friends in first grade. Their names were Kathy, and they were fun. They talked too much, and they didn't listen to the teacher. And I got to third grade. I met a girl named Kathy. I'm like, you're Kathy, because she wasn't that fun, you know. So turns out her name was Kathy with a C. I'm like, oh, interesting. A name makes a difference. She was much more studious. So if I wanted to have a study buddy, I'd pick Kathy with a C. So it turns out, absolutely, a Carrie with a C-A-R-R is totally different than a K-E-R-R. I mean, the A makes a difference, the K makes a difference. It's unbelievable how things completely affects how, like Caitlin, oh my gosh, there are like so many names that if you can spell with a K or a C, and you can spell with a Y. A Carrie with a Y is a Carrie with an I-E. It's unbelievable.
Now, in the case of Bruce Jenner, who has chosen the name Caitlin, most of us don't get to choose our own names, especially later in life. Our names are given to us by our parents. So does that make a difference personality-wise? What does it say about someone who grows into their name, I guess, as opposed to choosing a name they want?
Well, I can tell a lot of people who choose to change their names, and also people getting married, and they change, you know, their last name. They want to know how it's going to affect their overall personality. So it really does change things. But people think, oh, like, well, I got to tell you the truth. Me, personally, I thought when I was growing up, you know, I met a kid and their name was conservative. So I figured, oh, the parents are conservative. Or I met a kid with an unusual name, and I thought, oh, the parents must be, you know, more, you know, unique, and so they're raising the kid differently. But that's not how it is at all. Oh, my goodness. If you change your name, you change how people perceive you, and you change how you perceive yourself.
Mm. Now, chicken or egg, which comes first into what you just said? Do you perceive yourself differently because people perceive you differently based on your name?
Well, what I find is, like, when I don't know if you have kids, Peter, but if you have kids, when you're trying to come up with a name, like, you know, your wife would say, oh, I want to name her so-and-so. And you're like, oh, no, there's a kid in school that was a slut. No, I have that name. I'm not going to name my kid that way. So you already have preconceived notions. Like, if you have surgery, brain surgery, and I had two doctors for you. One's a surgeon Susan or surgeon Bambi. I guarantee you're going to pick surgeon Susan. Doesn't mean Bambi's not capable, but you just already have a preconceived notion of how a Susan is and how a Bambi is. And so just carry that for your entire life. So people already have a preconceived notion of what people are like. And so that affects people's personalities completely.
Bambi is not getting anywhere near me with a scalpel. I'll just tell you that right now.
Exactly.
That's just not happening. So I mentioned your website, NameZook, which in itself is an interesting name. What is NameZook?
Well, I needed to have a name in the title because I'm all about names. I mean, that's how I derive people's personalities. But I'm telling you, you know, domain names, when you go on the internet, you try to, you know, domain names. I mean, you can't believe how many sites have name in because they're trying to sell domain names. And, oh, my goodness, I tried everything. I even got, like, ridiculous. I did, like, bluehippopotamus.com, and it was already taken. I mean, like, how can it be taken with blue hippopotamus? But anyway, so everything was taken. So my brother recommended Zook. Just, he thought it just sounded, like, goofy. I looked it up, and sure enough, it was available, and that's how I came up with it. But that was like 10 years ago, and that's what it just stuck.
And what will one find when they go to the site, NameZook?
Well, you can get a free personality profile of yourself, and you can see what I've written about other people and see if I'm accurate or not. You can sign up to get reports. You can sign up for a consult. You can just learn more about the work and the research that I've done, and it's interesting.
Do you ever work with writers? And the reason why I ask that, I mean, writers are people, I mean, and when I say writers, I'm talking about authors. Authors are people who come up with characters and need to come up with names, and a lot of times they have a preconceived idea of what that character is or isn't when they're writing a book. Do you ever work with authors who are looking for character names?
I do. I work with them, and I work with scripts, and I work with Hollywood, with like TV shows and things like that. But before that, I mean, when I see a show and they got a name, it's like, there's a girl like, I can't even think what it was. Somebody had going off to get coffee at a lawyer's office. And I'm like, and her name was like really like a strong name. I'm like, she's not going to go get you coffee. What are you kidding me? So you have to sit and talk to these people. They just don't understand, because sometimes they are enamored with a name and they think, oh, it's so-and-so pretty. And it does. Like, some names look great on print, but that's not how they really are. So yes, I do absolutely do that. I consult. I do this all the time, and I love it.
But generally speaking, maybe percentage-wise, do people always or mostly live up to their names?
5% of the time they don't, based on my research. I've done really, truly extensive research. 6 years of research before I did my second book. My first book was just mostly off the cuff, just me telling them what I learned in my life. And then waited 6 years of extensive research. And 5% of the time, they don't fit. And I've learned because they don't fit is because they have chemical imbalances or they have mental imbalances. So like they're like manic depressive, or they're drug addicts or alcoholics or something like that. So if they don't have those issues going on, I'm telling you, 100% of them, I'm right. In fact, I consult with psychiatrists and counselors and doctors all over the world. And they'll call me confidentially and say, okay, this is a person's name and this is what's going on with their life. And what do you think? And then, like, it would be a person like it would be like a person named Ray, okay? And they say, what do you think? He's like, really doesn't talk that much. He kind of just doesn't share. He's kind of, you know, sits there. And I said, well, that's a Ray. I said, this is. Then I'd have a problem because pilots are off the wall. They're saying, I mean, fun, and they're, you know, they're animated. But hey, that's just personality. So you know, what they're seeing is typical.
I'm just curious, and again, chicken and egg question. Do you live up to your name because it's the name your parents choose for you? You know, if you're called Carrie, it's because your parents called you Carrie and they treated you like a Carrie, and therefore you become a Carrie.
Yes, the truth is I don't know how that works. I mean, but I do know that I consulted lots of people who've changed their names. They've actually consulted me that because they did not like their lives. Their lives were pretty miserable, and they wanted to change. They wanted to change something, and so they find out about me, and they contact me to change their name. And then once they change their name, they become a totally different person. So I think it's very possible. It is possible, but I don't know that much. But I do know if you change your name, if you are not happy with your life, if you change your name, then it will change your. It will change how people perceive you and how you perceive yourself.
Some people also have nicknames, and that's something else that people don't usually choose for themselves. How does that change the dynamic?
Absolutely. I know a guy named Skip. I know a guy named Trip. I know a guy named Buddy. I know a guy named Guy. Yes, it absolutely. It just then all of a sudden, your personality is based on what that new name is. It no longer pertains to. If you were born Clyde and you turn your name to Skype, I don't remember, to Skip, it changes who you are. It does. All of a sudden, everyone sees you as Skip. They don't ever see you as Clyde again.
The book is called Breaking the Name Code, Define Your Name, Design Your Life, and it's written by Carrie Hopkins. You can also go to her website, namezook.com. Carrie, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
You're so sweet, Peter. I'm so happy to be on your show. Thank you.
Personality profile expert Carrie Hopkins, author of Breaking the Name Code, Define Your Name, Design Your Life. You can check her website at namezook.com. You can also visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0303, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
34-year-old Alvaro Ortega was arrested for taking a uniformed police officer's cell phone in the East Coast Catering Deli in Bayonne, New Jersey on May 18th. The sleuthing was easy in that Ortega was the only other person in the deli at the time, and he sheepishly admitted to the theft. Now, why, oh why, would you steal a cell phone from a uniformed police officer when you and he are the only people in the establishment and think that you could easily get away with it? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0303. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0303. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma. And after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.